Om, om.
And we got this. Very good.
Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavidyan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Chaitanyam Sarvagam Sarvam Sarvaguhatuhashayam Yat Sarva Vishayatitam Tasmai Sarva Vide Namaha Om.
Good. You see here. Good. Welcome to you all. Nice to have you here for our continuing study of Upadesha Sahasri. I'm going to push all these buttons and come back here. Good. And welcome to all the students who are regularly watching, participating in these classes online. We continue our... That's interesting. We'll see how it goes. I mentioned that sometimes I'm dizzy. Very interesting to teach when you're like that. I decided long ago to enjoy it. So I don't know. Problem is, it might affect some of my teachings, but it's not a problem, as you know. It's not anything serious. Okay, let us get going here. So we begin today. Actually, nice place to begin. There's a bit of a summary in the next verse or two, and then comes the next topic. So we'll see all that. Atma buddhimanash chachur, Atma buddhimanash chachur, Vishaya loka sangamat, Vishaya loka sangamat, Vichitro jayate buddhehe, Vichitro jayate buddhehe, Pratyayo jnana lakshanah, Pratyayo jnana lakshanah. Very good. Okay. So, by means of summary, he says in the third line, samgamat. I'm sorry, second line. Samgamat. Due to the combination of Atma, your true nature as Satchidananda, due to its combination with what? First line, Atma here means body. And commentator makes it very clear. Combination with body, Atma, buddhi, intellect, manas, mind, chakshus, senses, not just eyes, but all five of your senses, vishaya, objects around you, and aloka, light. Your eyes would not be very useful if there's no light. That's an odd one. Your ears would not be very useful in a vacuum. Think about that. Because air is a medium through which sound travels. Anyway, that's the idea. You need a medium. We need the medium of light. So all of these experiences, vichitraha, in the third line, all this variety of vichitraha, what? Pratyayaha, last line. These various pratyayas, mental events, vrittis, all of them, jayate, arise, buddhehi, in the mind. Telling us nothing new, except that it's a combination of all of these factors. By the way, this is one feature of Vedanta that leads to some confusion. People like to simplify things. Tell me, is a jiva consciousness, or is a jiva the combination of the mind and senses? Is it A or B? Why not A plus B? So this is a very common problem. Which is it? Is jiva pure consciousness, or is jiva this combination of mind and senses? That's we have to understand. It's what we call jiva, the individual being, is a composite being, and is due to the combination of all these factors that we have these various experiences. This is telling us what we already know. So what is Shankara's point here? He says all of these are ajnana lakshanaha. They're all characterized by ignorance. There's several ways of taking this expression. I think the most helpful way of understanding it is this. They're all expressions of ignorance in this way, in a particular way. And that is, when you take them as being more real than they are. So right now you experience me sitting here in this chair. How real am I? Well, at least I'm as real as a chair. You can't deny that. How real is a chair? Well, the chair didn't exist 10 years ago. The chair will probably not exist in another 100 years. Its existence is very transient. And you remember that our fundamental definition of real is that which is not transient. Trikala tishtati iti satyam, a very common expression in Sanskrit, that which is satyam, that which is absolutely real, is that which abides in the past, in the present, and the future without interruption. So this chair certainly doesn't meet those qualifications. What about the Swami sitting in the chair? Same. What about everything we experience in the world around us? Same. It's not as real as it seems to be. Notice we're not saying it's illusion. If the chair I'm sitting in were an illusion, I don't know how an illusion would hold up all of this fat body. But the point is that we don't say, we meaning in it, Advaita Vedanta, properly understood, does not teach that the world is an illusion, but it says the world isn't as real as it seems to be. The world is not absolutely real, unlike consciousness. So we said, these experiences, Shankara said, all these experiences take place because of the combination of all these various factors with consciousness. The consciousness by which you know what's happening in your mind right now. Well, all of these teachings lead us to understand that the consciousness that reveals what's happening in your mind right now was never born, will never cease to exist, is unchanging, is vast, is limitless. All of these teachings have come and will continue to come. We'll see that even in today's class. That consciousness is real, as opposed to all of these other factors. So one real consciousness, when accompanied by all these various less real factors, results in all of our experiences. Point here is what you experience is not absolutely real. That reality belongs to the experiencer and not the experienced, one of our fundamental teachings of Advaita Vedanta. These verses content is a little simpler than some of the verses we've had before, so we may go a little bit more quickly today. We'll continue. He concludes this idea. Vivichyasmat samatmanam vivachyasmat samatmanam vidyachuddham paramparam vidyachuddham paramparam drashtaram sarvabhutastham drashtaram sarvabhutastham samam sarvabhayatigam samam sarvabhayatigam vivachya, having separated, having discerned asmat from all of that, from all of what? From atma, body, buddhi, intellect, manas, mind, chakshu, all the sense organs, vishaya, all the objects you see, and aloka, light. So asmat vichitya, discerning, swam atmanam, your true self as consciousness, discerning from all that. This is our drig drishya viveka, discerning the seer from the seen, discerning the knower from the known. Crucial. And when we return to these fundamental truths of Advaita Vedanta, please don't make the mistake I used to make, and that is, yeah, I know that. Not helpful. These fundamentals are arguably more important than all the fine points that come later. Don't take anything for granted here. So vivitya, having discerned the difference between the knower and known, seer and seen, then vidyat, Shankara commands us, you should know. You should know what? You should discover what? That swam atmanam, your true self, consciousness, the consciousness by which your experience right now is known, you should know that that consciousness is shuddham, pure, meaning unaffected by anything you experience. So often experiences lead to pain or sadness. And that's just a fact of reality. There are plenty of experiences in life that are painful. Stick your finger in a flame, you experience pain. When a loved one dies, you experience sadness. These experiences are inescapable. Yet, Atma is shuddham. Your consciousness is not affected by pain when you stick your finger in the flame. Your consciousness is not affected by sadness when a loved one dies. Your consciousness is the unchanging awareness that reveals the presence of pain in your mind, that reveals the presence of sadness in your mind. The pain and sadness come and go, thank goodness. Not real. Consciousness doesn't come and go. Therefore, that consciousness is param param, the ultimate goal, understanding that consciousness to be your true self. And the language that seems to be helpful here, when they say, should know your true self, maybe a better way, not maybe, I think very definitely, a better way of understanding it is a shift of identification. I think this is really important and maybe not discussed enough, even by me. When we keep saying, you should know your true nature, you should know your true divine nature, you've heard that a gazillion times. What does that mean in terms of your own spiritual practice? It means to shift your sense of identity away from the body, mind, and your activities in life, your profession, your family, and all of that, and to shift that identification to pure consciousness. So, to say know thyself is very lofty, and it's true also, but it doesn't express quite what we need to hear in this context. And what we need to hear, as I said, is that shift of identification, so that instead of being so identified and attached to body, mind, senses, all of our worldly activities, we shift that identification to Atma consciousness. I am the unchanging consciousness by which all these transient experiences are known. Shankara goes on to describe that consciousness as drashtaram, the seer, the observer, the witness, sarva-bhuta-stam, which abides in all beings. Stam, stands, abides. Abides in sarva-bhuta, in all beings, samam, identically. That, you know, that very common expression, the inner divinity, is what we're talking about here. The same inner divinity dwells within us all. Krishna dwells within us all. This language we hear all the time, and it's wonderful language, but in a more concrete sense. It means that the consciousness that's revealing your experiences right now is identical to the consciousness revealing my experience right now. So, consciousness is looking out through your eyes. Consciousness is looking out, the same consciousness is looking out through my eyes. We have different experiences, of course, because our minds and bodies and eyeballs are different and in different places. So that explains the difference of experience. Remember, consciousness reveals the experience. Your experience is seeing me. My experience is seeing you. It's not that consciousness sees me and consciousness sees you. Consciousness reveals your experience of seeing me. The same consciousness reveals my experience of seeing you. That makes it more clear. And then Shankara concludes here by the way, he doesn't conclude. He goes on in the next verse. We'll see in just a moment. But this verse concludes, sarva bhaya atigam. This consciousness is atigam, beyond. Beyond sarva bhaya, beyond all fear. Consciousness has nothing to fear because nothing can affect it. This is interesting. That which is unchanging can't be affected, right? In order to be hurt, you have to be affected. If you're not affected, you can't be hurt or injured in any way. And here's a silly example. Relatively speaking, a rock doesn't get affected. Of course, we know that rocks can be affected, but in a metaphorical sense. Like a rock. What, that rock just sits there. The rocks don't get hurt. What a silly observation. In Sanskrit, the word used is not rock, but kutastha, that which is solid like an anvil, unchanging. Okay, and therefore, nothing to fear, nothing can affect you. Nothing can hurt you. The sentence concludes in the next verse. Shankara continues, samastam sarvagam shantam, samastam sarvagam shantam, vimalam vyomavatstitam, vimalam vyomavatstitam, nishkalam nishkriyam sarvam, nishkalam nishkriyam sarvam, nityam dvandvar vivarjitam. Nityam dvandvar vivarjitam. Continuing about that Atma, prior verse, he said, vivichya, having discerned that conscious observer, you your true nature as Satchidananda Atma. He continues to describe that Atma as Samastam, whole, complete, undivided. Not hopeful. There's an inner editor. And the editor says, nope. Well, good. The editor is doing his job. All right. So, samastam, undivided, sarvagam, all pervasive, we discussed before. No bound. This word, all pervasive, so often gives us the wrong idea of something that's really, really big. All pervasive. Bigger than everything. Bigger than the universe. Not really big. Dimensionless is the proper way to understand. No height, no weight, no depth, no dimensions. So this is Sarvagam Atma, all-pervasive Atma, which is Shantam. What a lovely word. Shanti, you know. Shantam, quiet. The literal meaning of Shantam is quiet. And that's so significant because we all know how uncomfortable it can be when our minds are turbulent. Atma never gets turbulent. Atma is the unchanging consciousness that reveals all the nonsense in our minds. The beautiful metaphor that's been used again and again to describe this is actually a modern metaphor. When you see these satellite pictures of hurricanes, and you know in the outer winds of those hurricanes are going over 100 miles an hour, and in the middle of that hurricane, these satellite pictures are interesting because you see that little clear dot in the middle of that hurricane. No clouds, no winds, or at least very calm winds. In the center of that hurricane, even though the outer bands are, winds are blowing well over 100 miles an hour, still point at the center of the storm is the expression used by so many. And that's such a lovely expression because it describes where you find yourself when these teachings really go in and you're in the midst of a chaotic situation. Usually when we're in the midst of a chaotic situation, we feel very much affected, very much disturbed. Doesn't have to be that way. I've used this term healthy detachment many times. Here's a good place for that healthy detachment. Chaos is going on. Okay, watch it for just a moment. Just detach from that situation for just a moment. That word sakshi or witness is similarly beautiful because the sakshi is watching from a distance and not involved. The uninvolved observer. When you find yourself in a chaotic situation, and when you allow yourself a few moments of reflection and get this healthy detachment and observe that chaotic situation as an uninvolved observer, Shantam. Just lovely. You can find that still point in the center of the storm. This is not some kind of fiction. You can discover it for yourself. By the way, there's a video I published long ago on that topic. You can find that video. You might enjoy it. Shankara continues. That consciousness is Vimalam. So pure meaning. And again, pure meaning unaffected, nothing else. Shankara himself explains. Vimalam vyomavat stitam. That which stitam remains vyomavat, like space. like space remains unaffected. The metaphor used in ancient times was smoke. Smoke rising in the air doesn't affect space. A more modern example would be pollution in the air doesn't affect space. I'll tell you a bad joke. There's some good news about pollution in India. What is that? It's worse in Bangladesh and Pakistan. How's that? Okay. Anyway, sorry, that's a complete aside. Anyway, I actually read an article about that, just struck me. Anyway, pollution doesn't affect space. Shankara says, vimalam. Also that consciousness, nishkalam, partless, indivisible. Again, unchanging. That word unchanging is sufficient for many of these adjectives. Consciousness is the unchanging observer of your changing experiences. To discover that your consciousness, quote, your consciousness, is unchanging, that discovery is a, what do they call it, game changer. What, I've never used that expression. Anyway, you get the point. Shankara continues, nishkriyam, consciousness doesn't do anything. And the crucial point here, consciousness is not a willful agent of action. This is another key point that's often not understood properly. Consciousness is not a willful agent of action. I've joked with you before. You chose to come to class today. Who chose? Not consciousness. Unchanging consciousness doesn't choose, doesn't do anything. So that a decision to come to class today took place in your mind and was revealed by consciousness. Consciousness reveals the decisions taken by your mind, intellect. Okay. Nishkriyam. Literally actionless, but the key point here is not the willful agent of action. Sarvam, literally all, boundaryless, limitless, dimensionless. Nityam, eternal, unborn, uncreated. And dvandvaihi vivarjitam, Shankara concludes. Vivarjitam, without dvandvaihi, without duality. In particular, without another consciousness. And this may seem not intuitive to many people, because it's conventional to think that your consciousness is separate from my consciousness, is separate from everyone else's consciousness. That's conventional thinking. There are many consciousnesses. By the way, even in ancient Hindu thought, I should say, there were many dualistic schools of philosophy. Sankhya and Yoga, there are six traditional schools of thought. Among them, Sankhya and Yoga schools of philosophy are dualistic. They take every individual person to be an individual consciousness. And Shankara, in his Brahma Sutra Bhasha, is brutal in negating those philosophies. He points out very simply, if your consciousness is without qualities, and like qualities like boundaries, edges, limits, without qualities like happiness and sadness, without qualities like red or blue, if your consciousness is is dimensionless and qualityless, and my consciousness is dimensionless and qualityless, how will you tell the difference between your consciousness and my consciousness? Just take that boundaryless part. If your consciousness is boundaryless and my consciousness is boundaryless, where does yours end and mine begin? Obvious, right? This is a very simple refutation of all these dualistic concepts about the nature of consciousness. It is rejected. There can be only one consciousness, dvandvaihi vivarjitam, one without a second. Okay, how are we doing on time? Good. Now, next topic. Let's see.
Sarva-pratyaya-sakshi-gnyaha katam yeo mayet yuta katam yeo mayet yuta vimrishyaivam vijaniyaj jnana karma na vetiva jnana karma na vetiva.
So Shankara picks up the thread here, connecting to what he's just said, talking about the gnaha. Interesting that you can do that in Sanskrit. Gnaha, the knower, literally means the knower. The knower who is sarva pratyaya sakshi. Shankara's language is brilliant. The gnaha, the knower, who is the sakshi. By the way, these compound words are most often read right to left. So this gnaha, knower, is the sakshi, the awareful witness, detached observer, uninvolved observer of what? Sarva pratyaya, all the activities of your mind. This consciousness is the unaffected observer of whatever is happening in your mind, and about that observer, Shankara asks a bunch of questions here, four questions, he says, in particular. He says, the first question is, katam, how is that jnayaha maya? How is that consciousness jnayaha to be known maya, by me? Or we can turn, actually, better English, instead of saying katam, how, and just make it a question. Is that consciousness known maya, by me? Is consciousness known to you? We'll put it in second person now. Do you know that conscious observer by which all the activities are of your mind are known? Is that consciousness known? Jnayaha iti uta, or not? Is that consciousness known to you or not? Most of you can answer that question. Not known as you know everything else. You know me sitting in this chair because there's a knower-known relationship, seer-seen, observer-observed relationship between you and me sitting in this chair. Is there an observer-observed relationship between you and your consciousness? Interesting. You observe me, you see my orange clothes. Can you observe your consciousness and tell me what color it is? That's silly, right? So, this concept of knower-known relationship doesn't apply to knowing consciousness. And And we're going to get into a discussion about then how can consciousness be known. Let's begin by saying, he asks a question. Katam nyeyaha maya iti uta. Is consciousness known to you as an object or not? And definitely not known to you as an object. That we know. But there's, let me see this here. He says vimrishya, but if you think about it even more, vimrishya evam, if you reflect on this some more, then vijaniyat, then you might understand in a different way. How about this? And this is nice. I think it's Western philosopher Descartes who was known for the statement, I think, therefore I am. You've heard that a million times. Pardon the pun, did you ever think about it? About that statement. I think, therefore I am. To me, that suggests that if you don't think, you don't exist. Right? I think, therefore I am. Therefore, if I don't think, I don't exist. To me, that statement, you know, he put it in the philosophical context he put it, it was meaningful. And he's actually a highly respected philosopher for his time, highly regarded. But from a Vedantic standpoint, that statement is ridiculous. I think, therefore I am. So if I don't think, I cease to exist. What is that? Not only that, but there's from a Vedantic perspective, there's a huge flaw in reasoning. Which is fundamental, thinking or being? Which is more fundamental, thinking or being? Isn't being more fundamental? So shouldn't he say, I am, therefore I think? I am, therefore, I think or I don't think. That would be the Vedantic reinterpretation. I am, therefore, there can be thinking or no thinking. That's a Vedantic take on it. But watch what happens here. So Shankara says, here, vimrishya, suppose you make this kind of lame inference that Descartes made. And it's the lame inference would sound like this. Because my thoughts are known to me, I am consciousness. Now this, I'm going to give me just 2 minutes to bore you with some philosophical blabber. Because that statement on surface sounds okay. I am aware of because my thoughts are observed, let me stay with the original statement. Because my thoughts are known to me, I am the conscious observer. That sounds reasonable. It sounds like a reasonable inference. Except for people who study such inferences, by the way, there's a big fancy name. Those who study inference and inferential logic are called epistemologists. How's that? You have to have a PhD to understand how to pronounce epistemologists and understand what they do. Anyway, you know, epistemology is the study of how we know what we know and how we know what is valid knowledge and what is not valid knowledge. It's a crucial study both in Western philosophy and in Advaita Vedanta. There are big, important books on epistemology. For obvious reasons, we won't study those books here because it's a tough go. It's very, very thick. But if we put on the hat of an epistemologist just for a few moments, let's consider, is that inference valid? Because I am aware of the activities of my mind, therefore I am a conscious being. I'm pausing here because to explain it as epistemology properly explains it is a long go, and I don't want, and you won't enjoy it, and I won't enjoy teaching it to you either. But so at this point, I'd like to suggest that it's not a valid inference. A valid inference is there is smoke. I'm sorry, there is fire on the mountain because I see smoke. Because I see smoke, there is fire on the mountain. It's a classical example of a valid inference. Because I see smoke, there is fire on the mountain. Because I am conscious of what's happening in my mind, therefore I am conscious, turns out not to be valid. And you can probably get a sense of it from the fact that consciousness is found in both terms. There's a because term and there's a conclusion term. Epistemologists chop all this stuff up into so many parts and pieces. So because I am conscious of what's happening in my mind, therefore my true nature is consciousness. So that's a violation of how inferences work. I don't want to explain it in further detail. It won't be helpful. But let me suggest right now, we call upon the higher powers of epistemology and admit that this is an invalid inference. But it sounds okay on the surface. So Shankara says, vijaninat, vijaniyat, if you make that invalid inference, then he says, jnana karma nava, nava itiva. Then is that, is consciousness, if based on this invalid inference, is consciousness, last sign, is consciousness an object of knowledge or not? And I think that sounds a little abstract because it is. So Shankara here is made a stretch. He assumes that we've all studied big books on, what is it, Vedanta Paribhasha is one of the standard works on epistemology in Advaita Vedanta. He assumes that you've not only studied it, but you're a master of all that stuff. So I'll tell you what, why don't we set this aside? So Shankara says, vimrshya, if you think about it, even if you use this invalid inference, you cannot, even with that invalid inference, you cannot turn your consciousness into the term he uses here, jnana karma. The word karma here is used grammatically, object. An object of knowledge. No matter, even if you torture that inference, you cannot imagine that consciousness is an object of which you have knowledge. An object of knowledge, something known to you. Okay. Now, notice in this verse, Shankara has used a combination of yukti and anubhava, yukti, reasoning, and anubhava, experience, to examine this question, is consciousness known to you or not? And based on yukti, reasoning, and based on your own experience, as I said, you see me as an object, one that's wearing orange clothes. If you examine your consciousness, what color is it? What kind is it? You get the point. So you cannot turn your consciousness into an object that you can examine. That is based on your own experience and it's based on reasoning, yukti. Having said that, Shankara concludes this point by turning to Shruti. Not surprisingly, Shruti, scripture, yukti, anubhava, again and again and again, we fall back on all three of these foundations for the teachings of Vedanta. Adrishtam drashtravignatam, adrishtam drashtravignatam, dhabramityadi shasanat, dhabramityadi shasanat, naivam nyeyam maya nyayarva, naivam nyeyam maya nyayarva, Param Brahma Katanchana, Param Brahma Katanchana. Okay, so he's referring to scripture here. Actually, just to get the context, he says in the third line, Na eva gnyeyam maya. Evam, thus, eva, indeed, na gnyeyam, consciousness is not known as an object, maya, by me, anyaihi va, or by others. Consciousness is not knowable as an object by me or by anyone else. Why? Prior verse, he says, according to your experience, according to reasoning, and first half of this verse, according to scripture. What scriptures? In the famous Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, consciousness is called adrishtam drashta. The drashta, the seer or witness, which is adrishtam, unseen. The unseen seer. And avignatam, the next word comes as vignata, the unknown knower. Unseen seer, unknown knower. This is how it's said in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and it's completely consistent with the experience we've examined in the prior class, in the prior verse, and with the yukti, the reasoning we've used. So he's showing the congruence, pardon the fancy word, the congruence of shruti, yukti, anubhava. So here shruti, he gives this example from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the unseen seer, the unknown knower. Then he gives, this is actually a little humorous reference in the Kena Upanishad, there's Guru and Shishya. And Guru goes on teaching for a while, Guru says, "Do you understand this?" And Shishya says, "Yeah, I know." Guru says, "If you think you know Brahman, dabram is the only word. Dabram eva vijanasi. Actually, I'm not sure about the actual expression. It begins with dabram." Or Dharam. He says, if you think you understand all this, then what you understand is Dabram, very little. If you think you get it, you don't get it. If you think you've mastered all this stuff, what you've understood is Dabram, iti, only a little bit. Because you cannot say, I know Atma. As an object. We have to add that parenthetical part. How can we know Atma? Next verse, which we'll see next week. But here's the point. Atma cannot be known like anything else is known. Other things are known as objects to your five senses. Objects of consciousness, you are conscious of mental objects. Other things are known through inference, the fire on the mountain. So in all of these ways, Atma cannot be known through your senses. Atma cannot be known through inference. Atma cannot be known as an object floating around in your mind. By the way, how many times have you heard it said or read it someplace that in deep meditation, Atma will reveal itself shining like a thousand suns? You've heard that. What? Think about that. Atma reveals itself, shining like a thousand suns. If something happens in meditation and it shines like a thousand suns, is it known to you or not? It's known. Known to whom? Consciousness. It's witnessed. It's observed. It's a mental object. It's another pratyaya. Anything shining like a thousand suns. But how common that mistake is. It's made again and again and again, and by so many, and I have to say, by more contemporary teachers who haven't had the opportunity to study all of this properly. So he says, naivam, Shankara concludes here, naivam nyayam, it cannot be known, maya, by me, anyaihiva. Why? Because it is param brahma. Can't be known katanchana in any way, because that atma is the ultimate reality. It's the reality of who you are. The essence of who you are. The essence of who you are is not an object. I said at the beginning of the class that we, meaning students of Vedanta, might take this as being, okay, I already know this, drishyaviveka, see or seen, know or known, and just kind of write it off as being Vedanta 101. It is crucial. You are the unchanging consciousness by which all changing mental events are known, one, and two, that consciousness is boundaryless, limitless, vast. And through these teachings we come to understand that that consciousness which reveals the activities of your mind, the consciousness which you might think is something fairly ordinary, Shankara at the end says here, that consciousness is in fact param brahma, the reality because of which everything exists. Which makes perfect sense. The reality because of which you exist as a conscious being, and the reality because of which the cosmos exists, how could those be two different things? There's one reality because of, I'm giving the counterexample. There's one reality called Atma because of which you exist as a conscious being. There's a separate reality called Brahma because of which the entire cosmos exists, and never the twain shall meet. How absurd. We're talking about absolute realities. There can be only one absolute reality. And that's the highest truth of Vedanta shown in the Mahavakya, that tvam asi. That's exactly what the Mahavakya reveals. The reality because of which you exist and the reality because of which everything else exists is one and the same reality. Now, we've left one question unaddressed. So if consciousness, Atma, cannot be known as an object, then how in the world are we going to gain Atma Vidya? Knowledge of Atma. How can it be known? What does it mean to become enlightened? So that's our next topic. We'll see that next time. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukkhabhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya.
Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma hamritangamaya Om shanti 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 Om Tat Sat.
All right. Off.